This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. We'll be taking a closer look at the week's election results in a bit. But first, the New Hampshire Department of Justice is reviewing a series of personnel maneuvers that allowed a top state court employee to collect nearly $50,000 in employment benefits. That's following a layoff that lasted just 48 hours. Joining us now with more is the reporter who originally broke that story, NHPR's Todd Bookman on Zoom. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Rick.
First, can you remind us what you found through your reporting about that payout made to this judicial branch employee, Diane Martin?
Sure. So earlier this year, Martin, who held a top administrative job in the court system, was removed from that position. This was announced publicly in early March, no explanation given by the courts. But we were able to obtain internal personnel records that showed she wasn't actually formally laid off until April 1st. And then she was rehired into a different job in the court system on April 4th. So instead of just transferring from one position into another position, she was laid off for those 2 days. And that's important because a layoff allows her to collect her unused sick and vacation time, which amounted to just under $50,000, if you said. And a whistleblower alleges that this arrangement was orchestrated by Chief Justice Gordon McDonald, a longtime ally of Diane Martin, and that it was done at Martin's request.
And this was happening at a time when the Chief Justice was warning of layoffs and delayed trials due to tight budgets, wasn't that the case?
Right. So in April, the same month that this personnel maneuver took place, that also happened to be the same month that McDonald announced a hiring freeze across the judicial branch. He cited concerns about possible layoffs. And that was also the time period when the legislature was hammering out the next state budget. Courts were expecting to see some pretty severe cuts. It is worth pointing out that Martin's $50,000 payout, you know, that those are her earned benefits. That is, these are benefits that she would have been entitled to if she had actually retired or had been truly laid off. But officials I spoke with said the fact that she collected these benefits and then was rehired 2 days later is just a highly irregular maneuver.
Now, how has the Supreme Court responded to your reporting, including Chief Justice McDonald?
You know, we laid all this out for the court before we published our story. We gave them the opportunity to sit for an interview, to comment, to explain why these maneuvers took place. And we received a very simple response that said, you know, essentially, we can't talk about this because it is a personnel matter. After the story published, the justices on the court issued a joint statement essentially defending the maneuver. They said that Martin was laid off as part of a cost-saving measure, and then she was rehired because the new position she would be entering was eventually going to become vacant. There actually was still somebody in that job. They would overlap for about 5 months. You know, the statement did not really directly address the 48-hour layoff or the whistleblower's allegations that this was essentially, you know, a calculated decision. But the justices on the court are rallying around themselves and their actions, saying this was a decision they were all aware of, the exception being Justice Anna Barbara Hance Marconi, who did not sign on to the statement. She was on administrative leave at the time of Martin's maneuvers.
And now, Todd, the state's Department of Justice is launching what they say is a preliminary review into Gordon McDonald and how he handled Martin's payout. What do you know about the investigation so far, and what questions are you asking as it unfolds?
Sure. So the DOJ has not launched a criminal probe. The courts have said this is a non-adversarial review, but we were able to confirm that state prosecutors did send letters last week asking the Chief Justice, asking Diane Martin and the entire judicial branch to preserve evidence. They sent so-called preservation letters that instruct the courts and these officials to not delete anything. Don't delete voicemails. Don't delete text messages related to these transactions. The DOJ may want those records as it starts to look into this payout. In response, we know that Chief Justice McDonald, state's top judge, has hired his own personal attorney to represent him. He picked Jane Young. Young happens to have worked under McDonald at the AG's office. She's a former high-ranking official in the AG's office. She's a former U.S. attorney. She's highly respected around the state.
Well, Todd, before you go, I do want to ask you about one more story that you've been covering. Air Force investigation into a shooting death of an airman earlier this year in connection with the New Hampshire-based gun manufacturer Sig Sauer. Now, this week, two of the airmen involved in that shooting pled guilty for lying to investigators. What were their initial claims regarding the shooting?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tragedy that somehow keeps getting worse. In July, an airman on a base in Wyoming was killed. Witnesses initially said that another soldier had dropped his duty belt on a table and that the gun inside of a holster had gone off, killing this 20-year-old airman, Braden Lovin. A month or so later, the Air Force announced that an airman had been arrested for involuntary manslaughter having to do with Lovin's death. No details were released. Then we find out earlier in October that that airman who had been arrested was found dead inside of his dormitory. No cause of death has been released yet. And then finally, the Air Force released a statement just recently confirming that two other witnesses to this incident admitted that they had lied about what happened, that this wasn't the result of a gun being dropped on a table, and that instead the airman had pointed the gun in what they said was a joking manner, and then it went off, killing this other airman. So now we have two active duty members dead. We have two others court-martialed. Just sort of a sad situation all around.
But can you tell us a little bit more about how Sig Sauer plays into this? This was centered around the pistol that has been has had some issues or has been in the news a lot.
Right. So after the initial incident in July, the Air Force actually pulled this Sig Sauer made gun out of use for about 30,000 military personnel. This gun is on the civilian market, sold under the brand name the P320. In the military, it's the M17 or the M18, depending on its size. And this gun has been at the center of repeated allegations that it has a flaw that makes it more susceptible to firing unintentionally. There have been more than 100 lawsuits. And so when this incident broke publicly, a lot of people in the firearms community, you know, raised questions about whether or not this was another potentially, unexpected discharge of this gun. Air Force did a pretty thorough review of about 8,000 weapons. They returned them back into service. Flaws in about 2% of the guns inspected, these unexpected wear marks on internal components. So those guns were pulled out of line, and they will be, fixed and put back into use by the Air Force.
And HBR's Todd Bookman, thank you so much for taking the time this morning and reviewing some of your reporting.
Thank you, Rick.
You can find more of Todd's reporting, of course, at nhpr.org. Now, New Hampshire voters made their way to the polls in municipal elections this week. Joining us now to talk about the results is NHPR's senior political reporter, Josh Rogers. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Rick.
Incumbent city leaders seem to have a good time, a good night anyway, on Tuesday. Several mayors reelected. What races stood out to you, Josh?
Well, Manchester's a mayoral race for sure. Jay Rouet, a Republican, won comfortably over Jess Spillers, a school committee member. But Democrats in Manchester did regain control of the aldermanic board. June Trichiani and Dan O'Neill easily beating Republicans Joe Kelly Lavasser and Will Infantine. And the at-large races, I think, were significant outcomes. Democrats added seats on the school committee, so a strong win for Rouet in Manchester, but not so great for other Republicans there. As for other cities, it was good for incumbents. Byron Champlin reelected in Concord, Daglin McEachern in Portsmouth, Dale Girard in Claremont, Matt Girding in Somersworth, and then you had Jay Conn in Keene and Robert Cohn in Berlin, who really were reelected without challenge. And, you know, there were some open seat races in Laconia. Republican state rep Mike Boards beat Bruce Cheney, a former police chief and current city councilor. In Rochester, which was also open seat, you had Chuck Grassley, a Democrat, beat out Matt Mayberry, a Republican. And, you know, there was another race of some interest for a special election for a New Hampshire House seat in Berlin. Both political parties put a lot into that race. Republican Mark Tremblay nosed out Democrat Corrine Cascaden by just 15 votes. We're probably going to get a recount in that one.
Yeah, just 15 votes there. Okay, so very close. Now, several cities also voted on whether to authorize something called social districts, interesting term, where adults could purchase and consume alcohol in outdoor municipal spaces. How did that turn out?
It was mixed. Laconia adopted social districts pretty easily. Concord passed it more narrowly. The other places where it was on the ballot, Keene, Portsmouth, and Nashua, all rejected it without much suspense. This all comes from a recent change in state law to allow these districts, so-called sip and stroll. When I was at the polls in Concord on Tuesday, A bunch of voters told me they didn't know about the question or what social districts were before they arrived. I don't think they were alone. It'll be interesting to see how this policy plays out longer term. Social districts really aren't that common. About a half dozen states authorize them, none in New England.
Well, New Hampshire won't look quite like New Orleans anytime soon.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, Tuesday was also the first municipal election where New Hampshire voters hoping to register at the polls were required to provide paperwork proving they're U.S. citizens as well as proof of residency. Given municipal elections have much lower turnouts than you know, midterms and general elections, I'm guessing there weren't too many issues?
Not that I'm aware of. Election workers I talked to on Election Day said they were prepared to help voters understand what the requirements were and to help them if they needed it. But moderators I spoke with in two wards in Concord and two wards in Manchester said only a handful of voters seemed affected, and those who were, at least some of them, went home and were able to fetch the paperwork they needed. And so no issues that I'm aware of any consequence there.
Josh, was there anything else that stood out to you about this week's results?
Well, you know, municipal elections aren't billed as partisan, but, you know, they are often. I mean, everyone runs with a party affiliation, unofficially. And, if you tally all the races, mayoral, school board, city council, it was a pretty good election for Democrats in New Hampshire, mirroring national results, really, for Democrats. You know, GOP candidates won some high-profile races, but overall, Democrats did a lot better on Tuesday than Republicans did.
Mirroring what's happening, of course, nationwide.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, Governor Kelly Ayotte's campaign committee is promoting New Hampshire in Manhattan. This was an interesting story that broke yesterday. I'm thinking this has something to do with New Yorkers electing Zohran Mamdani as mayor this week.
You're right, Rick. And what Governor Ayotte's campaign committee did, not the official governor's office, but her campaign committee did, was hire a box truck to roll around Manhattan, displaying several messages. One read, quote, "New York City business owners, Mamdani got you down. Come on up to New Hampshire for no communism, less red tape, less taxes." There are other messages of a similar vein. And, you know, I think at this point we know that Ayotte, or at least her strategists, very much like to invoke liberal states as a way to suggest New Hampshire is different and exceptional. You can recall "Let's Not Mass Up New Hampshire" was a prime campaign slogan of hers.
Yep.
And this is very much in that vein. And, it got some attention.
So what kind of reactions have you been hearing from, other local leaders about this move from Ayotte?
Well, it's pretty mixed. I mean, this is kind of an eye of the beholder situation. Ayotte and plenty of Republicans see it as good politics. It's kind of on the towel snapping end of the political discourse. Again, we're talking about it. So mission accomplished on that front. Her lone opponent in 2026 so far, Democrat John Kuiper, was quick to criticize it as out of touch given the federal government shutdown. But, I'm not sure Ayotte or her campaign at this point is much concerned about Kuiper right now or that kind of criticism.
And HBR's senior political reporter, Josh Rogers. Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
You can find more of his work, of course, and all the stories we talked about this morning at nhpr.org. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.